Good evening, everybody. This is Mayor Taylor, and good evening from Gustavus City Hall. It's our Monday, April 4 work session, first work session for this month. And the first item is to read the vision statement, and our vice mayor has agreed to do that for us. Kyle Bishop, please.
We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and in caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. This evening, almost everything that we're going through is on our draft agenda, which is on the screen here. So I'll just briefly, a lot of the things we just will touch on and mention that they're on the agenda. We don't need to discuss them. We'll have the public health nurse with a presentation first on the agenda. And then we'll have our usual approval of the general meeting minutes from March. And then reports from the volunteer fire department, the marine facilities coordinator, the city clerk, quarterly report, city treasurer monthly financials, and the city administrator actual report. And Tom, did you want to make any comments now? I know you didn't have a complete report, I think, here for us for tonight. We'll see it all at the general meeting, but was there anything you wanted to discuss up front here? I think Tom's on here somewhere.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Mayor. I did want to get some direction from the council on our work in trying to obtain a grant writer for...
Clerk says you've got some document or some things to put up, Tom.
Yep. This is...
I'm not hearing you, Tom, if you're... But it looks like you're on... You're not muted.
I can hear Tom. I think something on your end.
Maybe.
Can you hear me now, Mayor?
I can hear you, Tom.
Thank you. Yeah, it must be on.
I'm still not hearing Tom.
Karen, can you hear me?
Put my sound on mine. Hang on a sec here, everybody. We got to get our sound to work here in the city hall. Oh, she can? Okay, good. So hang on a sec, Tom, and we'll get it so we can hear you in here. I can put it on. Okay, Tom, let's try it again. I've got you on mine.
Okay, so can you hear me, Mayor?
Yes, I do now.
Yes, I do now.
Okay, thank you. So I was looking for some direction by the council. I have discussed this with the mayor. We are trying to get a grant writer to assist us in applying for multiple grants over the next, several years, but primarily over the next 6 to 8 months. As you're aware, the American Rescue Plan Act and the Build Back Better infrastructure bill is providing multiple opportunities for us to get some important projects constructed and hopefully even some important equipment purchased with very reasonable cost to the city. Most of these grants have some sort of a match, and that's what I mean by opportunities for us to get funding at little cost to us. We went to the Alaska Municipal League and asked them for references in their pool of grant writers. They put together a list of 10 or 12 grant writing firms that they had references for and or experience with. And they've been using that list for communities like ours that don't have grant writers to be able to get assistance in writing these federal grants. And it's not just writing the grant, it's also managing the grant and acting as our project manager to ensure that we're meeting all of the requirements each grant department or agency may have different reporting requirements. And, you know, if you're doing several of those at a time, it certainly can be overwhelming. So we contacted multiple grant writing firms. And each time we thought we had a good one to discuss our two projects that we're currently interested in, that's the bike and pedestrian path and the wave barrier. Each time we did our follow-up to try to get a commitment, they were already booked up. So we reached out to Solstice, and they are a grant writing firm. It's a small firm, but they we asked that we get put on their list, even though we hadn't made a commitment to utilize them yet. So unless there is some objection by the council, I would like to go forward with getting Solstice to submit a formal proposal. What you see in front of you is their fee schedule. And if there's a page two there, Karen, there's a proposal that goes with it. It's pretty boilerplate. The scope of work that they're going to perform for us is a range, thank you, Karen, of items that will help us not only submit applications, but also put together the packages. When we tell them what our project priorities are, they'll be able to help us put a package together that meets the objectives of the particular grant we're working on and utilize documentation that we already have. For example, we sent them our capital improvement plan. They were excited to receive that plan because it gave them a lot of background. And it's also a document that we do every year and as such has multiple opportunities for public input, which is a high priority item for grant applications, especially to the federal agencies. So the types of projects that they'll do are pretty standard, but in addition, they were suggesting to us that we consider having a survey done for the community that does a better job of gauging our poverty level. Currently, we're 5 or 6 percentage points from being eligible for a lot of grants, like community block grants, that have a poverty level threshold. We are in a underrepresented, underserved census district, the Angoon-Huna census district. We are in an opportunity zone, two factors that work well for us in trying to get some of this funding. They felt that based on their experience with similar communities as ours, that if you do an individual survey rather than the state's approach to surveying, you can pick up those extra percentage points and become eligible for some of those programs. One of the benefits of those programs, as an example, is match requirements. If you meet that poverty level threshold, you could get a 50% reduction in your match or no match requirement at all. So we thought that was a really good suggestion. It would be something that they would prepare and conduct for us, and it would be an additional benefit in their service. So that was what I wanted to discuss. Again, the mayor and I have had a teleconference with Solstice. We both feel that they would be a good firm to help us with our grant approach. And I'm happy to answer any questions, or if there is any opposition or wish to have us look for additional firms, that would be great. Council Member Sherman, I see your hand up.
Yeah, Tom, having had exactly zero experience working with contract grant writers in the past, and in the interest of possibly avoiding some sticker shock, can you estimate or guess at what the cost to the city might be for them to research and generate grant proposals for those two projects, along with the sort of the re-census thing?
Yeah, thank you, Councilmember Sharman. That is an excellent question. Of course, it's one that the mayor and I ask every firm that we talk to try to get an idea. Karen, if you could go back to that first page, the fee schedule, you can see what the hourly rate for those services are. You typically get a firm to give you a couple of options. One is an hourly rate, like we have here. One is a percentage of the grant itself. Some grants allow for an administrative fee, and some firms use that administrative fee to pay for their services, and that way the client doesn't have any out-of-pocket expense. And then there's some that they take a look at the difficulty of the grant. They just give you a project cost. The hourly rate is a good way to go. For the it's administrative fee, where they just take a line item out of the grant itself. But when we discuss that with a couple of the different firms, the ARPA grants and the Build Back Better grants, so far that they've seen, and they haven't all come out yet, they're just coming out slowly, don't allow for that administrative expense. So Solstice is going with this hourly fee. If I was to ballpark, say, the pedestrian and bike path, I'm just going to throw some numbers out. I don't want anybody to take those as this is what the project would cost. There's a couple of phases to these projects. One is the background part, you know, getting the application ready to submit. Then you have the design element, and then you have the construction element if it's a construction project. So each one of these would have different pieces. Some grants allow you to submit them all at once, but typically you have to have one before you can have another. If you remember our discussions with our water grant we are trying to go through Village Safe Water, they require that we do this $70,000 to $100,000 study before we could apply for a construction grant. This is very similar to that approach. So if we were to take the pedestrian and bike path planning aspect of the project, and we were to say that this the planning and design cost $100,000, then you know you could plan on this costing us probably somewhere around $10,000. If we had a lot of the documentation already in place and we had preliminary engineer drawings and those kind of things, it would be much less. But if we had to go through and get those pieces put together, they can be spendy. If you remember the bike path project from 2019, the design cost on that project was being estimated at $500,000. That was a more complicated design project, but to give you some feel for how these projects can expand into very large expenses, you know, we have to be ready to determine whether or not the cost benefit is there. So if we were able, for example, not to have any out-of-pocket expense, and we were able to get a grant to cover both of these pieces, you know, that would be a tremendous asset to the community. We're also working in the DOT right-of-way, so we're hoping that DOT will be a strong supporter in the project, and that goes a long way in helping us be very competitive. And we're also reaching out to the park, and hopefully they'll partner with us, not only in support, but if we do have some costs such as a match, perhaps they'll step up and join us again for a project that they were very supportive of earlier. Councilmember Makoviak, I see your hand up.
Yeah, we have a letter of support from the Department of Transportation for the pedestrian bicycle path.
Right, and that'll be very helpful. Like I say, we are in there right away. If they're supportive of it, then you know that gives us points and the ability to do the project. It's always great if we can get these other agencies to chip in to any of our expenses. And as we develop the grant application, hopefully they'll step up and do as much as they can to help us get the project accomplished. Oh, I did want to say that Councilmember Makoviak did a lot of the heavy lifting in writing up the information that we're going to provide to Solstice for the grant. A lot of the background overview, and the mayor also provided some community description, and there is a lot of work that's already been done both on the Gustavus Road from the school to the Elbow and the Mountain View segment, two different projects, but both with a lot of input from those periods. So not seeing no objections there, I'm going to go ahead and contact Solstice and work with the mayor on getting them on board to start working on grant application preparation. Thank you, Mayor.
Can you remind me what budget line we're going to use for our expenses on the with the grant writer? Was it professional services or some such? I'm afraid I don't remember.
Yeah, it's going to be professional services, and when we talk to them, we'll have two different ways to go here. One, if they're able to get on this right away before the end of the fiscal year, then we're going to need to do an NCO so that we can get funding in there if we don't have it already. I'm not sure, because it's hourly, I'm not sure what pieces of the project they're going to do and what that cost and timeline is going to look like. I'll have a better idea after I talk to them, hopefully this week. And then for fiscal year 23, based on what they tell us in terms of what to expect for grant preparation for the projects that we've identified, we'll make sure that we have enough money in our professional services to get these started. And we'll have a better idea as they get going with our background material. And then we'll have a better idea of what we're going to be looking at in terms of project cost. It's most likely that as we go forward with the projects, we'll find out what the costs are going to be for each aspect of the application process. And we'll have to transfer money around to either cover matches or professional services. And of course, all that will go through the council for approval.
Okay, Jim, did you have something else? I see your hand still up, or another question on that, or maybe it's just your hands still up on the screen.
No, I guess I didn't take my hand down. I didn't realize the question was answered.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't skipping you if you had something else to say. So, yeah, great. Okay, thanks, Tom. Yeah, we'll look forward to working with the grant administrator here. And since there's quite a bit of work to do in these grants, and you know, it's so we've got Jim and also Kyle's working with Jim on the bike path stuff, and so they're going to be feeding information to the grant writer, but the grant writer does the real organization and the writing of the grant and understands the structure and how to apply best for it. So it's going to make a big difference in our in the probability that we'll be successful on some of these. And we may be working with them on a grant also for energy conservation on some of our buildings. We might be able to score some grant money for, say, a air-to-air heat exchange for ventilation of City Hall and things like that, possibly even heat pumps. So I'm interested in looking into those possibilities with the, as because there looks like some grant opportunities coming up for them too. So we may use the grant writer for help on those. Okay, on our consent agenda at this point, Lewis, thanks. Lewis, what do you have for us?
Yeah, just real quick, Jim and Kyle, I suspect you guys have already thought about this, but it's probably worth, if we haven't already, starting a conversation with the park to gauge their level of interest in taking the bike path from the park boundary out to Bartlett Cove, because it's the kind of thing that the Park Service seems would be really interested in. And if we can even get a sort of in principle interest in collaborating, that might be worth quite a bit in terms of whatever grant we submit being reviewed favorably. Thanks.
Right, I think they've already got that on the radar, so we'll look for opportunities to work with the park too on that. Okay, so on our consent agenda, we'll have the certificate of records destruction, sort of our monthly thing on that, and then we'll also have approving the city administrator position description and announcement, unless you want to put that on the new business, which is also a possibility. And in fact, I think we should probably go to that now and talk about that item, because we need to get our announcement out and start seeing if we can pull in some applications, with Tom planning to leave us in a few weeks here for his life over in Sitka. And so we've done some work on the city administrator a job description, and the previous job description was a little complicated. It had two possible levels, level one and level two. And as I reviewed them, I felt that that it was unnecessarily complicated, and it wasn't that easy to say where the boundary was when somebody was at level one or level two. And so I've kind of merged those two things into a single job description that I think represents pretty much what the city administrator needs to do. But there's some important changes to it. And the first is to make it a regular full-time exempt salary position. We need a city administrator to be able to have plenty of hours available, and the city administrator needs to work some pretty odd hours, not only just for meetings, but we're often working on road issues or snow plowing decisions and things like that on weekends, could be Sunday, any day of the week, late at night. Sometimes we're talking about stuff, planning for fixing a problem like on a road or something. Since the city administrator is a supervisor of other department heads, it's certainly the kind of position that really ought to be an exempt, that is, salaried position. And we really need it to be full-time, so we've got enough time to manage the grant processes and the projects that we're developing all the time. Some of the projects will develop from the grant writer efforts if we're successful in the grants, but we have a lot of other projects that we have smaller grants from, or that we're getting funding from FEMA on, and they actually take quite a bit of oversight and time to develop them, put them out for contract, manage the contracts, and get the work done. So there's a lot of work for a city administrator here. So I've suggested that to you in this job description that it ought to be changed to that kind of position. The duties are all pretty much the same. And I don't know if any of you have had a chance yet to look through this description, but if you haven't, I hope you will soon. It's enough different from the previous one that it, in my view, requires council approval for these changes. So I really look forward to your review and approval of it. So it'll be on the agenda for approval next at the meeting next week. Does anybody have any questions at this time about it that you want to ask me about? Not seeing any yet. I should mention, I've got under our personnel rules, the mayor has the option of forming a selection committee for a new hire, and I have done so. Tanya Lewis is the one council member on it. Also, Phoebe has agreed to serve on it. Justin Marchbanks. Let's see, who else am I forgetting? And Tom, yes. Yeah, right. The person who knows more about this position than anybody else, Tom Williams. So I knew I was short one there. So that's our selection committee, and I've routed this job description to those members of the selection committee and put a lot of And they have given me ideas for them that I've incorporated every one of them into the job description. So it's not just something that's my work. It's a work of a team here. The next item after that on the consent agenda is to approve the scoping document for the radio repeater tower installation. I know I've got Sol on the line here, and Sol, do you want to give us a brief description of what we're doing there and tell us about your scoping document, which I thought was very well done?
Yeah, so this kind of like developed over time. Our antenna has been, degrading the last like 5 years and been, losing our area of, good communication. So I was able to get money to get replacement for the antenna through a health and communities contract. However, accessing the current antenna and putting the new antenna up there is proving difficult due to a lot of the big rigs around here can't reach it. And because of that, I was looking out for options, and I got told about the tower that's just sitting at the DRC, and that's about 50 feet. So it's going to be taller than the one we have now and provides a better access to it. So this project would, in short, would replace our antenna and tower and provide a safer way of accessing antenna if ever maintenance-wise come towards it. Some complications is that the tower has been sitting at the DRC since 2009. It was meant for a project that was supposed to go up to the hydro that got canceled due to other complications. And the plans were set for there. So I'm looking at other companies trying to figure out if set up new plans for installing it at next to the fire hall. This would hopefully expand the radio communication for responders, because we use our radios pretty much in any emergency situation. Other than that, yeah, I'm glad to take any. Something also worth mentioning is it also will help our 911 system as well. As the repeater goes through the phone line, which is our 911, which then helps us respond to our 911. And this new repeater tower and antenna, new antenna and tower would help us hear the caller easier. So.
Okay. We're talking about this, Sol, we could skip ahead to item 18 on our agenda, which is a motion to award the consulting contract for the design work for installing this tower. There was an original design for installing it up at Falls Creek, and Sol's been in contact with the design firm, which has changed hands now, but they've changed their name, but it's essentially the same legacy firm, and they've agreed to update the plan for installation at the fire hall instead of up at Falls Creek, and that means probably the foundation is going to be different and some things like that. So, Sol, do you want to say anything about that motion to award on the consulting contract and how much it is and so forth?
Yeah, so the cost is $6,500. This will include plans on how big the foundation is to keep it as a freestanding tower. If it's deemed necessary, they will come and do some soil samples and generally it was under a different name. Like I said, and it was bought out by a different company, at Respec. But this will also include some inspections, which this is the price of a cover itself, if I'm reading it, if I read it correctly, of course. But yeah, other than that.
Right, that's, and we'll get a, I think we'll be getting a cost estimate from them. Usually the engineers give us a cost estimate with their design work. So we took sort of a guess at how much it was going to cost. I think we put in $15,000 just as, you know, in the scoping document, but with the design, we'll have a much closer idea of how much it'll be. And Sol, I've been meaning to remind you, one thing we don't want to forget is if we're going to put that in front of the fire hall, we need to make sure that the construction doesn't reach out into the right of way. But I think we've got something like 13 feet or 18 feet, something like that, in front of the fire hall. Originally the fire hall was in the right of way, and they changed the right of way from 50 feet to 33 feet. And we bought the rest of that land in front. So we've got some space there, but we just got to make sure it doesn't get out into the DOT right away, because they would object to that. Any questions about that project?
If I can say it.
Okay, go ahead.
There was another option. Instead of putting it in front, we could put it on the side of the building. That would probably keep it within the right of way, but we can discuss that another day too. But
right, and that would get rid of the problem with the right of way issue. Sol, while we've got you on here, the next item was a scoping document for the structural firefighting gear. Would you like to give us a summary on that project, please?
Sure. So this one is to hopefully replace our fire gear. This is actually still the radio repeater, FYI. Generally what's going on is about 8-9 years ago, we bought our current fire gear, and due to NFPA regulations, fire gear has to be replaced 10 years after factory manufacture date. And so we're coming up to that, so we need to get new sets of fire gear. So we got 10 operating sets right now. I do believe we have like 3 or 4 more suits in storage. So hopefully 15 suits, which cost about $43,000, $43 and change. Talking to the sales rep for Curtis here, the prices are expected to go up after this expiration date here. Hence the reason why I'm asking for $50,000 instead of $43,000. I did receive a grant for $4,700. That should be coming in around March, April. That will help. But with this purchase here, but essentially this will provide us better PPE to replace our current fire gear and keep in within the NFPA standards, which is the National Firefighter Protection Agency, which is what guides, it's basically OSHA for firefighters.
Okay, do we have any questions from the council on this project to replace our turnout gear, fire turnout gear? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands coming up, but you can read more about it there in the packet. Thank you, Sol. That's great. We don't have any ordinance for public hearing scheduled, or any unfinished business continuing from previous meeting. So we'll be into new business next. And the first item will be our public hearing on the approval of the Cooperative Resource Management Agreement for the beach. Remember, we posted it at the last meeting for public comment, and we've got a lot of emailed in comments. I'm really pleased to see the ideas coming in and the thoughts and the support for our beach. So we have, the plan is to, I've invited Ben White, who's the Southeast Regional Office Manager for Land and Water, the person we've been working with on getting this thing completed with DNR. I invited him to come out for the hearing. He had said they wanted to do it. I haven't yet got a confirmation. I even called him and left a voicemail for him today and haven't heard back. But I'm hoping that he'll come out for the meeting and be here for our public hearing on that item so he can hear any comments from the public. And I'm also hoping to, I've suggested in my invitation to him that we would have an opportunity for the public to meet Ben and perhaps his person in his office who's also working on this, Megan Hightower, on the afternoon before that down at the beach. So we'll see if we can make that happen. And I'll put out, once I get a confirmation from him on whether he's going to be able to come here, I'll put out a notice so people can know they could meet informally with the DNR folks and let them know what they think about the beach CRMA and the development plan and so forth. So there's a resolution on there that I've written to approve the CRMA. Well, it recommends to DNR that they sign it, that they approve it, which they haven't made a formal decision yet on to approve. And it authorizes the mayor to sign it on behalf of the city so that we have a signed agreement. And so that's in the packet for you to take a look at too. Do you want to stick it up on the, can you find it there? It's not very long, actually. Well, I guess it is. Do I ever do anything that's not long? No. So there, yeah, you can look through this resolution, but it just gives a little bit of the history, the reason why we ask for an amendment, an update to the CRMA and the cooperative or the resource management plan, a development plan, they actually call it. So the whereas is in there, give a little bit of background to it. So read through that, and that will be on the agenda for approval, and we'll have public comment at a hearing first before we adopt or move to adopt the resolution. So I'm hoping we'll have good comment and so forth on it. Looks like Lewis has a question.
Mike, thanks. I understand that in the process of sort of rethinking all of this, one of the things that DNR felt was pretty important to them was to provide the option for camping on those parcels. And as I read through the public comments, there are at least a couple of folks who had some pretty good questions about potential impacts of camping and the degree to which the city might be able to control that impact. What can you tell us about if we in DNR sign this agreement, how much wiggle room does the city have to sort of control the amount of camping and the impacts it might have? Thanks.
Well, thank you for raising that. I should have gotten into some detail on that because it was one item that we were in disagreement with DNR as we did the negotiation with them for the changes in the development plan. We had proposed that there be no camping because we were concerned about impacts between of campers on other users of the park, people walking dogs and so forth, because we had problems with that in the past. There also are concerns about bears and whether there would be problems for the campers or the bears from that relationship, food there at the site and so forth. So we really were pretty skeptical about that, but DNR came back to us and said they approved everything we asked for except for the camping ban. And they said that because the quieting title with the DeBoer family lists camping as one of the allowable uses for the tracks under with which they have covenants on, that DNR felt it was necessary to provide for some camping means. And they also said that generally on state lands, they allow camping unless there is a strong reason not to. But they said that we may designate a spot for camping and only allow camping at that one location. And we have had some informal discussions with beach advocates and so forth and the staff here about where that could be. And the idea is to have a designated spot that is on the east side, would be just north of the east side parking area up against the trees there. Sort of the trees would be between the camping area and the tank farm. And there's some sort of little bays in the trees up there that we could have, well, maybe a couple of campsites, and we'd post it as a designated camping area. The city would have the power to, under the CRMA to set rules for camping there. Can be enforceable and so forth. So we don't have somebody just trying to live there. So we can have limits and things like that, but so all we left it as vague as we could in there, saying that we would designate a camping area, and then we can decide going forward what level of regulation we need to put on it. If we find we don't really have very many campers, maybe we don't need to worry about, say, permits or the like. But if it looks like we're having issues, and we need to regulate more, than we can follow up and do that. Now, DNR, in our discussions with them, they've said if it turns out that we really have problems with that, for instance, we have bear issues, then they would be willing to take a new look at that, and we could probably close the camping area pretty easily. So I think we've got enough wiggle room there to manage it going forward. If it works and it's not an impact on the park or on the wildlife, then that's great. If it doesn't work, we'll try setting rules or managing it more strictly. And if that doesn't work, we can always go back to DNR and suggest that we delete that that idea. So that's kind of where that is. Does that make sense to you, Lewis? Or anybody else have any comments on that? Okay, good. So I'm looking forward to getting that through. It's one of the things I really hope to accomplish during this year while I've been mayor, is that we'd actually get that CRMA up or the amendment done, so we're in a stronger position to manage the park going forwards and have clear authority to do so. Okay. Okay, I guess the next is item 14. And that's the FY22-13 NCO budget introduction. And Our treasurer is at her desk here, and I think is prepared to give us a quick review on this. Madam Treasurer.
Good evening, everybody. So this is an NCO to authorize the budget that's coming up. And it's a very simple document.
Was Tom going to speak to this one? Tom, are you there?
I am here. I'm sorry. I thought I was going to see the spreadsheet. So we initially intended to introduce the budget at the April general meeting. Yeah, there we go. That's what I was looking for. But because of the surprising turnout and comment on the town hall, we felt that there may have been a misunderstanding of when the town hall was, or if after reviewing the budget, there might be additional comments or questions. So I wanted to withhold introducing the budget until we went through the work session and general meeting this month to give every opportunity for comments and changes to the budget before we introduced it. It's not just a matter of changing the spreadsheet. The budget document itself is a Word document that incorporates charts and graphs and narratives with dollar amounts, and having to rebuild that is a more difficult process than just waiting until introducing it in May so that council members or public members can have every opportunity to make comment, and if any changes are made, we can have a clean document, both for introduction and then for the public hearing. So we're continuously updating our spreadsheet for fiscal year 22 as dollars and expenditures change. For example, we have the departmental NCO that's going to, if passed, affect our fiscal year 22 budget lines. And we're also expecting to get more accurate information from the state and federal governments on funding that we're going to receive from different programs. We should be receiving that information this month. So it's just going to be a more clean document in May than it would be in April. So we're happy to address any questions or have any discussions on the budget if council has any questions or any areas that they want to talk about. Otherwise, I'm done, Mayor.
Any questions for Tom on this budget introduction NCO? Okay, well, I hope everybody will spend some time pouring through this so that you're familiar with it. Look at it line by line. And I know many of you have come in and spent some, maybe not everybody, but most have come in and spent some time with Tom and Eduardo on this to understand. But if you've got any, if there's an item that pops out as you don't understand it, or you think it's too much or too little, then how about getting with them and make a suggestion there? Okay, the next is FY22 NCO for the departmental budget. And this is a budget adjustment NCO. And this is actually what I was thinking of when I called on the treasurer a minute ago. I jumped ahead in my page here. So now I think she's ready to give us a description of what she's got on this one. You're on mute, I think, still, Eduarda. Looks like
about now.
Oh, there you are. There you've gone off. Okay, yeah. Sounds good. Thank you.
So these are several adjustments on our budget category. I'll start with the income, and this is all for the DRC. So the first is the income for the community chest sales. The original budget was 13,500. And we are not, most likely we're not to meet this number. So we bumped it down for 11,500, giving a change of 2,000 less on the budget. The next is the land fees. And we are going to receive a little more because of the household hazard waste event in May. So the budget line originally was $69,000. It's going to be amended to be $69,500, and the change will be $500 plus. The DRC income recyclable material sales, we exceeded the original budget. So we are going to, the original budget will be 3,600 and amended for 5,100, and the change will be $1,000. For the other income, which this refers to t-shirt sales that Paul proposed to do. So there is nothing on the original budget, and we amended for 500, and the change will be 500 plus. In the meantime, with all this in and out of money, the total change on the income is zero. So now we go for the expense.
Excuse me, I've got a question. Something I hadn't noticed before on that DRC income recyclable material sales, it looks like, and I'm looking at it on my screen here, 3,600 to 5,100, and that's not a $1,000 change. That's a little more. Is that?
Yeah, you are right.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that before. So
we'll
correct that line.
Yes.
Is the, if the amended budget is 4,600, then the change is still the same.
Yes.
Maybe so we can fix that on the,
exactly.
For the.
Yeah, the change is still the same. I'll fix it. Okay. On the expense side, the marine facilities, Ben is going to move the floats, and we need to budget the wages and the employer contributions. So on the wages, we have in the original budget, $17,756, and we're going to amend the budget for $18,173.80, giving the change $417.80. And the employer's contribution passes the original budget is $1,242.96 and amended for $1,272.21, and the change will be $29.25. Then the DRC, because of the Clean Harbors that's going to happen in May, we propose for the contractual services, on the original budget, 37 $3,700 that was original there, and we amend for $47,700, giving a change of $10,000 plus on this item. The DRC equipment, they need more fuel, so we are going to do from 1,700 to 2,125, and the change will be $425. Equipment, maintenance, and repair, $4,000 original, amended $4,325, and it will be the change of $325. Also on the DRC, there was no dinner, for the CC, the Community Chest Volunteers due to COVID. So we had originally budgeted $250. So we amend the budget for zero and we change for less $250. DRC fundraising, that is the t-shirts, we have nothing budgeted there, so it's zero. We amend the budget for $600 and the change will be $600. The training, there is a decrease to match the actual training expenditures. So the original budget was $750, amended $125, and the difference of $625. DRC travel, there will be no travel anticipated to the end of the fiscal year. So originally budget $500, amended budget zero, and $500. Yes, we have for the fire departments, Sol already gave an introduction with the scoping documents. So we have equipment to purchase. It was zero budgeted. We bumped to $50,000 and there is the change of $50,000 plus. This will come out from our AMLET accounts in capital improvement long term. And as you can see, the original budget was the difference is 50 negative, so it will cover the gear that we need to purchase. Also talked about the tower. So this is for the tower too. The contractual services was at the initial original budgets $6,900 and becoming amended budget $13,400, and the difference will be $6,500. So this is on the scoping documents. Admin, because we, as you all know, we had two treasurers. We exceeded our hours. So this is to fill this void. So we have an original budget, $12,505.88, and we bump it to $27,505.88. The difference is $15,000 to the end of this fiscal year. We also have on admin expense advertising for the position for Tom. So we had $360. We bumped it to $860, so it's $500 plus. And finally, the library needs more fuel oil on the item. So they had $4,000. We bumped it to $6,000, and the difference is $2,000. Thank you.
Okay, looks like Lewis Sherman has a question. Lewis?
Kyle, if you could go back to the previous page,
just had a question on that second DRC expense, third one actually. Is the Clean Harbors thing, is that the hazardous waste thing? Is it, and what changed?
The increasing fees. The second.
Right, it's the hazardous waste event.
And so yes. why did it go up by $10,000? Is that just the state decided it was going to cost $10,000 more than they said the first time?
See, I don't know that we've got Paul on here, but I think, as I recall, there was an increase in the, oh, Paul is on there? Okay, good. Paul, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We do, yes, thank you.
Yeah, the first estimate, and this is based on our, because we worked with Clean Harbors back in 2018 for our first event. And so they based their price of what everything will cost, assuming those same quantities, or roughly those same quantities. And the first time around, that was $31,000. And that was $1,000 over budget. And these are approximate. But then they hadn't properly calculated their shipping expenses as far as the material leaving Gustavus, because it's hazardous waste. It has to go out on the lightweight, cannot go on the ferry. And they've had increases in their supplies. So we made it, I mean, the second quote came in at 36,000. And so just so that there is some cushion in case the community brings in more material than what they did in 2018, we put the increase at 10,000. Our hope is that it won't use that full amount, but we definitely need more than the 30,000 we originally budgeted. And so 36, it could be, you know, in terms of community does the same amount, but in order to give a little more cushion on that, that's why it was an additional 10,000. And the thing is if you don't use the money, it stays in the city's checkbook. It's not something that, you know, is being committed to this. It's only if you need it. But it is because, and I imagine if we, you know, do this same quote in a couple months, who knows how much more it would also be, just because there's a lot of inflation in this area right now. But does that answer your question?
Looks like Lewis says yes, thumbs up. Any other questions on this NCO? Okay, thanks. Thank you, Madam Treasurer. And we'll address this next week. The next item I have is item 16, approval of the consulting contract with P&D engineers for the schematic design of the Gustavus Disposal and Recycling Building. Paul, do you want to give us a review on that item, please? Looks like Paul's still on mute.
What was the question?
Okay, going to the next item, the approval of the consulting contract for the schematic design for Gustavus Disposal and Recycling Building. Do you want to give us a quick review on that item?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So you guys might recall in December, I produced an RFQ for services to work with the city on the design and construction estimate of a new DRC building. And that was an overly ambitious agenda for that RFQ, and no one bid on it. There was two interested firms, but neither of them bid on it just because there was a number of things that didn't quite fit. So I went back to the two parties that had bid. One was P&D Engineers and another was Livermore Architectural, a firm in Oregon, and discussed it with them. And because PND is local. I mean, they were both qualified. They were both interested in the project. They were both, you know, quite qualified. They had built transfer stations and stuff like that. But because PND Engineers is actually in Juneau, it made travel to the location a lot easier and a lot cheaper. So I decided it would be in the city's best interest to go with PND Engineers. So, and I basically modified the proposal that I had before. And instead of producing, you know, blueprints for a building and an exact cost analysis, this is more of, it's kind of like a schematic design, and it will give a estimate of cost that you could use for grant funding and for stuff like that. It will, you know, so it kind of, they'll produce two drawings and they'll, you know, and then the council would select one of those when it's going to, for funding. And then they would kind of produce I'm not quite sure what they call it offhand, but basically a phase one kind of cost analysis, so that we would have an idea of what this project is going to cost going into it looking for funding. So it's not, you know, we're not getting blueprints, and we're not getting an exact cost, but we would be getting, you know, diagrams and illustrations of what the building would likely look like, you know, and how you lay out things on the inside, and then what the estimated cost for that building would be. And that's kind of the goal of this proposal.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Any questions for Paul on this item? We're looking forward to getting a better description of, and having some, you know, maybe a better engineering look at what our options are on that building and really what it ought to look like. And we'll be in a much better position to ask for grant funding for it, because we'll have an actual cost estimate and a plan, you know, a schematic design plan. That's maybe about 10% of the design or so, but that's enough for us to get to apply for grant funding for it. So that'll be helpful. And so, okay, if there are no more questions on that, the next item is there's nothing in your packet on that. That's the award of the Gustavus Fish Passage Improvement Project, Grandpa's Farm Road Bridge. And I think you're probably all familiar with this project, something that we've been trying to do for years, and we've continued to work with Fish and Wildlife and a couple of months ago or so, they contacted me and said, well, we really want to fund this thing 100%. And it was it's the first or second priority in Alaska for Fish and Wildlife to do this, to replace that culvert with a timber bridge and improve the fish access into that very productive stream that we call Harry Hall Creek in the lower reaches, and Mountain View Stream, where it runs along Mountain View and up into the park. So there's a lot of fish habitat there that they're interested in improving the access to. We've done some of those other bridges over the years. You may remember 5 years ago or so, we did several bridges that had more serious barriers to fish passage, but this was the last one. And so they said, we want to pay for this. And so we put it out to bid. And because we had the design documents all done and everything, so we put it out to bid and opened the bids on, I think it was the 16th of March. The successful bidder was Glacier Bay Construction, who's done the other bridge projects for us. The next step is to actually award it. And I've held up the award until we got a little more concrete confirmation from Washington, D.C. that they will, in fact, fund it. I didn't want us to award it if there was any chance that they were going to pull the funding for some reason. So I had a discussion with Andy Stevens in Anchorage, who's the our point of contact for this. And he said that actually what was holding it up was not a question about whether they would fund it, but rather getting all of their ducks in a row for a whole bunch of projects into one big package and doing an announcement on it and so forth. So he said that by this Friday, this coming Friday, we should have an email from them with a statement saying, you know, confirming the funding. There is some possibility that they would confirm partial funding first for the manufacture of the bridge package and shipping to Gustavus if they weren't quite ready to say, yeah, we here's the money for all of it. They can at least do that out of the regional budget while they're still futzing with their announcement and everything in Washington, D.C. But he is very, very confident that this is going to be a go. So we've got it on the agenda to award. If there's any problem with, if I don't get that statement on Friday, then I can pull it. But if we pull the item off the award agenda, and Fish and Wildlife is well aware of this, that the bids are good for 30 days and the costs are going up on the bridge package, particularly the cost of timber and steel. And the bridge manufacturer may come back and say, no, we need more money now. And they are a little bit anxious about that. The manufacturer will be Western Wood Structures in Tualatin, Oregon, who did the other bridges for us. So we are 99.9% confident this is a go. So we've got it on the agenda for you to approve. And again, it's 100% funded, which is really a great deal. We don't have a match. So it's a deal that we just can't afford to pass up. And we're doing everything we can to push this thing through. And I've been talking to Andy Stevens up in Anchorage about two or three times a week because I've been a little anxious about it. So at any rate, that's that item. Any questions on that? Hope everything goes okay. And we can award this and get them a notice to proceed in time within the 30 days of the bid. Okay. The next item, Sol already talked about the motion to award the consulting contract for engineering for the radio repeater. And then there's item 19 that just got added, and this is something that came up about on the day of our deadline for the packet. And so our clerk has graciously worked with us to stick in something after the deadline here. And Tanya is writing a resolution in which the city would, the city council would indicate its support for the Alaska Ocean Ranger program. That's the program that puts Alaskan rangers on cruise ships to make sure they're not running into whales or dumping garbage and dumping sewage and that kind of stuff. So it's a really important control on the, you know, observational control on the cruise ships that it helps keep them meeting their obligations to not pollute our environment or run into the whales. The governor had proposed striking that program from the state budget. And so this is an effort by various communities here in Southeast to encourage the legislature to put that funding back in the state budget. And the city of Petersburg just today passed unanimously their resolution. Tanya is going to be working to edit their resolution to fit Gustavus. And so she'll have that available for us by the Wednesday deadline for the packet for the general meeting. So watch for that in the general meeting. Does anybody have any questions about what we're doing there? Jim McCoviak.
Yeah, this is a real issue, and it's been quite a few years ago, but once I saw a cruise ship in Icy Strait and it was going pretty slow, and I thought, wow, they're looking at whales out there. And I later found out that in the between Gustavus and Point Adolphus, it's more than 6 miles. So there's a period there, there's a stretch of water which isn't state waters. And they were actually dumping probably gray water, but that's what they were doing out there. So this is an issue locally.
Right, that's exactly the kind of thing we need ocean rangers to be watching for. So thanks for that example of the value of that program. And in fact, this is something we could even put on the consent agenda. I'll just have to read the resolution, or Tanya will, but we could put that on the consent agenda if it's okay with everybody. All right. Okay, I've given you one big item here. My risk assessment for this month is in the I've emailed it to you, and I guess it'll be in our packet too for the general meeting. Having reviewed the risk situation for the COVID pandemic, the state alert levels, the CDC alert level or a risk level for our census district is low. The states, it's moderate, but that's also a very low rating of risk. I concluded that we are to where we can dispense with our masking requirements for city buildings. And I've also reviewed that with the city staff, and they have been, there's been a consensus among them that we're okay with doing that. Although there are, you know, staff members correctly pointed out that there is, of course, some concern that we could have a new variant with a new surge or something like that. And we could have an outbreak in Gustavus that might be a significant case of community spread. And so there was the interest in us being able to reapply for a temporary period the masking requirement for City Hall. So the resolution that I put forward, and you can read all the whereases and so forth. Maybe you want to go ahead to the, I think the resolution's on there. That runs about page and a half or something. It gives the rationale for this and repeals the last two resolutions that set mandates, or well, not mandates, obligatory mask wearing and so forth for city buildings, repeals those, but gives the mayor authority, should there be a significant outbreak, to reinstate a mask requirement for up to 2 weeks. And so that's the plan. I hope you'll if you haven't read it yet in your email before the meeting, read it closely. And that's something we need to, I think we've got a good opportunity here to move forward with reduced risk in the community. We promised that we would remove those requirements when we didn't feel that the risk environment justified them. And so I think it's time to do that. And I think there's good support in the staff. And I think within the community, a few people I've talked to said they agreed it was time to do that. So that's that. Looks like Lewis Sharman has a question. Lewis?
Mike, is it worth attempting to quantify what constitutes a significant outbreak or increase in risk, just to make your job easier to reinstate some of these restrictions? Or, I mean, I'm just anticipating there being, if something like this does happen, you know, there's gonna be a lot of argument over, well, was that a significant enough increase or not? you know.
Yeah, that's thank you, Lewis. I don't know how we can quantify it, because the I mean, we could, I suppose, say that if our EOC has 10 or 5 cases or something like that. But part of the problem with that is that a lot of the testing is being done with home testing and isn't reported. We do get informal reporting, and we hear about it from Facebook and emails and people notifying their contacts and so forth when there is an outbreak. At this point, we're not aware of any cases in Gustavus at all. I'd be a little hesitant to try to set a numerical trigger for that, because it's not that clear. You know, we wouldn't be that clear when we'd actually triggered it, you know, exactly how many we had. But if any of you have any suggestions for that, we could sure put it in the, you know, we could amend the resolution and put that in. So if you want to think about how we could do that, I'm open to giving it some thought. But we probably do have to have some flexibility here. I'll tell you, I'm not going to be anxious to reinstate this. So it's not like I'm itching to do it by any means. And the direction that things are going nationwide and within the state suggests that this is kind of the direction that the pandemic response is going right now everywhere. So I think we're likely to stay on this track and go to essentially one-way masking. And we will, as I pointed out in the resolution, by the way, we'll continue to work on improving ventilation here in City Hall. We'll continue to have alternative channels for delivery of our public services, such as curbside services and Zoom meetings, so people can attend our meetings over the web. And we'll continue to look for things like that so that we don't have to go to masking again. I don't know, does that sound workable to people? If you got any ideas, I'm all ears for it. Okay, well, please review it. And if you have some ideas, we can amend this at the general meeting if you would like to. If there's something, it does give direction to the mayor, the city administrator going forward on how to deal with this pandemic risk going forward. Okay, I think we've got through about everything here. Right. This maybe. Oh, okay. Bella Furr has a question or a comment, please.
Yeah. Is this a good time to just mention something that wasn't on the agenda?
To add something that you'd like to have on the agenda?
Just to mention something. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Okay. So I received an email from Whitney Rapp regarding the public comment period for the ditch cleaning to restore the drainage at the Gustavus Airport. Public comment is scheduled to close in 2 days on April 6th. And apparently they didn't sample the ditch last fall. And because we don't have, you know, solid quality data to make an informed decision, and sampling is supposed to occur this month, she asked that the council request an extension of the comment period for at least 2 weeks past the public release of the ditch sampling results so that we can make an informed decision. And she sent that to me later today. So I just thought I'd bring it up for discussion and see if anyone else had thoughts on that, if that's something we can do.
Certainly. Thank you, Bella. I got Whitney's email too, and she sent me a text during the meeting here about the same thing. I think the easiest way is for me as mayor to just go ahead and ask for an extension. It seems like a great idea. There's no downside to it that I can see. It's probably not going to significantly delay the cleaning of that ditch, which of course I'm interested in getting done. But we're interested in getting it done in a way that doesn't spread any of that PFAS contamination anywhere. So having sample results to review certainly is a reasonable thing to ask for. So if everybody's happy with it, I'll send a request as mayor asking them to extend that. And my guess is that if the mayor asks them, they probably will do so. Any other comments on that? And thanks a lot for raising that. I had forgotten to bring it up. Okay, one other thing I'd like to ask council members about. There are two council members here in the room. I would really like to see us since the pandemic situation is easing off, I would really like to see council members here in the room for our council meetings, both work sessions and general meetings. I know it's comfortable to sit at home and at your desk or the couch and tune in by Zoom, but it's just not the same as having you all here in the room. And it, of course, it used to be we didn't have Zoom and everybody had to be here. And if you weren't here in the room, you were absent. I'm not about to really come down hard on charging people as absent if they don't show up here. And I realize sometimes people are traveling and can tune in via Zoom. We have good hybrid facilities here though now. So I would encourage everybody to join us here in City Hall for our general meeting. We have a public hearing. And I think having everybody here at the table who can possibly be here, I know we'll have one council member at least who's away, who is on an excused absence, but I'm hopeful that the rest of you would be able to do that. Louis Sharman has his hand up. Louis, what are you thinking?
Mike, I'm really supportive of that. And for all the reasons you listed, I think it's really important that we show up in person and encourage the public to do the same thing. I would have been there tonight, but I just got back from 2 weeks of travel and didn't want to introduce COVID somewhere potentially. But yeah, I'll definitely be there next week and encourage the rest of the council members to do the same.
Thank you. Glad you made it back from your 100-mile hike, and I'm looking forward to hearing how that bit of the Pacific Coast Trail was for you. I hope to see as many of you can possibly do it. We'll make accommodations. You can wear masks. Masks will still be required until at least we pass that resolution. And of course, after that, everybody is welcome to wear a mask if it makes them feel more comfortable. We'll try to make it work for everybody, but I'll look forward to having more people here in the room, and I think we'll all enjoy it. Okay, does anybody else have anything they wanted to bring up or offer to the group? Okay, I'm not seeing any more hands up, so thank you all for participating, and thank you to the public, and quite a number of people were tuned in and paying attention to what their council is doing, and we thank you all for your interest in your city government, and we look forward always to hearing your ideas via email or in person and so forth. So thank you all for tuning in. And with that, we'll say good evening.